New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
This podcast is part of the Podbelly Network. Please visit podbelly.com to see a complete listing of all of our other shows.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twain. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, eh?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Polly, and their dog Ninja.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 210 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
We've got a lot of stuff to get to today. We're going to talk about the live event that we had in Pigeon Forge. Obviously, we're going to talk about the fact that we are writing a book. And we obviously have a story to tell you. That's kind of what we do. It's kind of forced upon us. No. I mean, when you do a podcast, yeah, you kind of got to do what you're supposed to do.
Oh, so that's right.
But anyways, before we do that, obviously, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thank you guys and gals and dogs for everything that you do to keep us safe. And big thanks to everybody on the front lines out there while COVID is still going all over the country.
Yeah, and especially for our police officers right now. They are having a tough time with all these riotings that's going on, but we just want to say an extra prayer for them. Y'all be safe. Thank you guys for protecting our country and keeping us safe. We love y'all so much.
All right. We know for a fact, I read an article day before yesterday that was talking about how the COVID, especially with people that were having to stay home because mm-hmm. maybe they're high risk or something like that, how this is affecting them, how the overdose rates are up, how the suicide rates are up. And it was just basically saying, you know, 4 months into this, it's just getting worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just want people to know that, you know, you've got people who care about you, whether it's family, whether it's not family, whether it's friends, whether it's us. There are people you can talk to. And we want you to be able to reach out to it. We have our group that I personally feel like is a super supportive group. I know occasionally there'll be a little kerfluffle, if that's a word. And, you know, when you've got 5,000 people in a group from all kinds of different backgrounds, all kinds of different religions, all kinds of different cultures, you know, not everybody is going to see things exactly the same way. So occasionally we'll have something that, you know, somebody doesn't feel like is supportive. Others feel like it is. Regardless of the fact, as a majority, the group is very supportive. And I think they're there for you in your time of need if you feel like that you need to be there. So join the group. Give it a try. I think you'll be impressed.
And if you need to do this, you can call the suicide hotline at 800-273-8255. Or you can text them at 741-741, but please reach out.
Awesome. And we're going to talk, like I said, at the end of the show. I'll probably talk a little more about the group and what we're doing to try to keep it as safe as possible for everybody involved. And like I said, it's tough when you got 5,000 people. So.
And we're grateful for every one
absolutely.
Of you all.
Absolutely. But it is a task, so I just need people to be patient and realize when there's 5,000 people involved in anything, nothing is going to go exactly the way everybody seems to think it is. Though there's going to be some differences. But, you know, like I said, we'll get into that a little bit more. All right, Tracy, let's get on with this story.
Okay.
So I always love it when we get to the opportunity to talk about haunted prisons. Honestly, they're some of my favorite episodes that we've done, but I try to kind of space them out a little bit because obviously most of the prison stories have a lot of the similar backgrounds and stuff like that. And I don't know if people actually even pay attention, but I try not to do too many of the same types of episodes at once.
Right.
So, like, I'll do a couple of hauntings, and I'll throw in a poltergeist, and I'll throw in a cryptid,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, a UFO and stuff. And then we'll get back. Because, I mean, if you do, like, six haunted houses in a row, people probably start getting kind of bored of that.
And yeah.
So I try to mix it up a little bit.
I'm sure.
And I think the last haunted prison we did was the one up in Wyoming. And that one was super fun. I like that one. So. What usually sets these prisons apart are the histories. Like the Ohio State Reformatory, for example, you had the warden's wife who accidentally shot herself. Well, it depends on who you talk to. Some people say she accidentally shot herself. Some people say it was a suicide. But, you know, she was one of the ones that was haunting the place. That was, you know, unique to that one, which was kind of a cool focal point from Ohio State Reformatory. Then you got Eastern State, which you got the constant solitude of the prisoners there, not allowing anybody to speak and all the torture methods they use. Then Moundsville, you had the Native American aspect there with all the mounds that were straight across from the prison. So tonight we're going to talk about the Missouri State Penitentiary. This is one that we've had suggested a couple of times just in the last few months.
Good.
Yeah, once was last week. So I thought, you know what? Let's just go ahead and knock it out. Like I said, I've already had it on my list, but I don't normally have a list in order. It's just whatever I feel like doing. Sometimes I'll start one and not really feel it and move on to the next thing on the list. So Tracy, are you ready to find out why the Missouri State Penitentiary's nickname was the bloodiest 47 acres in America?
Oh, my Lord. That's a lot to live up to.
It is. So the Missouri State Penitentiary was opened up in Jefferson City, Missouri in 1836. But do you know why it was built in Jefferson City?
I do not.
Jefferson City was the capital of Missouri back in 1822. But over the next 10 years, they had a bunch of other cities that were vying to be the new capital. In order to stay the capital, Jefferson City had to do something spectacular, something big. And the governor of Missouri at the time was a gentleman by the name of John Miller. He had a plan. In 1831, he decided to build a state prison. This would be a maximum security state penitentiary. So the following year, the state legislator approved it, and construction was started in 1834. After 2 years of construction, the prison opened in 1836. So it basically was built just so they could keep the Capitol in Jefferson City, Missouri.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, what you got to do.
I'm sure it was needed, but...
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
But it was, you know, I don't know how he came to the conclusion that a prison was what to do to keep the state capitol there, but that's what he did. Initially, it housed just 15 prisoners when it opened up, and their job was to make bricks.
Make bricks?
They made bricks.
How do you make bricks?
Well, out of clay and stuff like that.
Oh.
Well, there was a lot of limestone on the property,
mm-hmm.
as you're going to find as we get a little more into this, that they used for a bunch of other stuff. These bricks may have been limestone bricks.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, that's probably the case. When you hear more, it'll make more sense, I think. So the prison was to be a work in progress for years to come. They eventually started housing more prisoners, and they used these prisoners to build a mammoth prison. This place is huge. Huge.
It has to be if you said mammoth.
Eventually, earning the nickname The Walls. It obviously got this nickname because it had very high limestone walls surrounding the whole facility. There were 15 different officers' towers.
Oh my gosh.
The prisoners housed here also built several mansions, including the Warden Mansion that was built by stone that was quarried right there on the site. So like I said, there was all kinds of... So when you said bricks, mm-hmm. initially I'm thinking like your basic red bricks.
That's what I was thinking.
But I think they were probably bricks made out of quarried stone that was right there.
Okay.
By 1968, the prison was still expanding, and it built its oldest remaining building, the hall, officially known as Housing Unit 4. The building was built to specifically house post-Civil War criminals, and it was designed by Warden Horace Swift. So that's pretty cool. You got prisoners. You built a whole building just to hold Civil War prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And he said post-Civil War prisoners. So this was even after the war. They were still holding them for whatever reason.
Well, I hope they built them something nice since they had to live there.
I don't think that's what the intention was. Eventually, the prison would reach a capacity of about 2,000 inmates, and that's kind of stayed the average there for several years. The first female was brought into the prison in 1842. When the prison first opened, they operated a lease program. And this was like a program that allowed businessmen to come in and lease prisoners to come work for them.
No.
So if they wanted to go build something, or they wanted them in a factory or whatever, they could come there. They would pay the prison money, and then they would basically
put them to work.
Put them to work. Kind of like a temp agency when you think about
definitely.
It.
No benefits.
Right. The benefit was they got out of that jail for a while.
Well, that's true.
We know that the prisoners built most of the prisons themselves, but they also built several buildings in Jefferson City, including the first Capitol building and the first governor's mansion.
Oh, nice.
Several area homes were also built by prison labor. So they were getting the most out of their prisoners.
Well, sounds like it.
And see, and I think, I mean, not to try to take jobs away from just your average guy on the street. But, I mean, I think that's what should be happening with prisons and stuff like this. Here's something I didn't know. And I actually learned this when we were in Savannah. Or what was it? St. Augustine, when we went to the old jail. You know how they had the chain gangs, obviously. And they were always, like, busting rocks and stuff like that. You know there was really no need for that? Like, they weren't busting those rocks for something else. Like, they wouldn't sell them to a company that used them for something. That was just their way of making them do something. So it's like they were busting rocks for basically like no reason for the most part.
No kidding.
In some of these cases on chain gangs. Not on all of them. Some of them they were doing stuff that was purposeful, but they were just making sure that they had hard labor, even if there was no need for it. They would just create a job. So I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that. I always thought they were.
Yeah, you know, I did too. I did not know that.
For concrete companies or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, that's a hard job to do.
Yeah. So we mentioned the AHAW earlier. This building was used all the way up until the prison closed in 2004. So it was built in, what, the 1860s, I think, is when it was built, and it was still in use.
Amazing. That is amazing.
In 2004. So the basement area of the building was known as the hole. This is where their hole was. This is where they kept the hardened criminals. This is where they kept the death row inmates. It was a medieval-style dungeon that housed some of the worst criminals that the prison had to offer. Over the years, the prison housed as many as 6 factories inside of its walls. So not only were they having people go out on that program that they were using to work inside of factories, they had their own 6 factories inside of the prison itself.
I wonder what all they did.
Well, I'm glad you asked. In 1885, they were doing shoes, clothing, and even twine. They made twine. So, pretty cool. And the biggest that they did there was a saddle tree factory. Do you have any idea what a saddle tree is?
I feel like I should, but I don't.
Well, I didn't, so I looked it up. This, by the way, this saddle tree factory they had in this prison was the biggest in the entire world.
Oh, man.
A saddle tree is, think about a saddle itself. So the saddle tree is the base of the saddle that then gets covered with the leather or whatever on it. So it's kind of like when you think of a saddle, you see it all in leather and stuff. But actually, it's the part that's covered underneath of it. It's covered with leather. But that's what they made there.
Well, good to know.
And I'm assuming you've already figured out that all of this was done with prison labor.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I mean,
right.
But why I'm saying that is by the 1900s, the Missouri State Penitentiary was known as the most efficient prison in the country. So I mean, think about it. Let's put this into perspective. We always hear about prisons and how much it costs to house the inmates.
Yeah.
And it'll cost this many thousands of dollars to house an inmate and all that stuff. And what money do you get back from it? I know some of the prisons, you know, they would do license plates and stuff like that for the government to try to help recoup some of that. But they were actually making money on their prison. So what they had coming in off these factories and off of their labor that they leased out was actually more money than what it was costing to house and feed the prisoners.
Oh, so they made a good profit.
Yeah, they were making a profit, which, I mean, when you think about it, that's kind of incredible. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you'll have people out there that say, well, I mean, that's not right. If they're already locked up, they've already lost their privileges, you know, in society, that they shouldn't be forced to have to work for. And I get that. So I can see both sides of it. But, you know, we're talking 1900. So
right, yeah.
A whole different way of looking at stuff. Yeah. The Jefferson City Star Tribune went as far as to say that it was the greatest prison in the world.
Well, that's an honor, I guess.
I don't think the people who were inside there would necessarily believe that, though.
Yeah, I'm sure not.
In 1905, Housing Unit 1 was constructed. This building was the housing for female inmates.
Well, what'd they do with that one?
I don't know. I guess they probably just kept her. I mean, theoretically, you're in a cell by yourself. So, well, I mean, even though they probably had to just work different things for, like, going to the bathroom and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, that's good for her because I'm sure they had more than one in each cell. At least she got her own cell to herself.
I'm sure that's what they did. I mean, it's a good question, though.
Thanks.
But as far as that building that... building unit one, housing unit one, that is now the main entrance to the penitentiary if you go there for a tour.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. In 1914, there was more expansion to the prison, and housing unit three was added. This was the capital punishment and segregation unit.
Oh.
this was not the good place to be. In 1936, the prison had 4,900 inmates.
Damn.
Remember back, we just talked
15,
back before, they had about 2,000 back in the day. But also at the same time, unlike when we talked about Eastern State Penitentiary, how you got the same size prison that just kept increasing, they were building onto this prison. So, I didn't really see anything where they talked about it being really overcrowded. Uh-huh. Now, I did see, like in the whole, that these prison cells were extremely small.
Oh, I'm sure.
So they didn't have, they might not have been overcrowded as far as having crammed people into a cells, but they didn't have very much room, even if it was one person in there. At its highest point, there were 5,200 prisoners, which was far more than what it was designated to hold, but still not as bad as some of these other prisons.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
In 1937, inmates built the gas chamber.
Oh, God.
Well, they built the building that the gas chamber was in. I don't think they actually built the actual gas chamber.
Oh, no, but just...
probably above their pay grade.
Yeah.
All executions before this were done by hanging. 40 prisoners would die in that gas chamber. But, here's a little trick question for you. Only 39 would die in the gas chamber by gas. The other was, he was died in the gas chamber, but it was through lethal injection.
I think I'd rather have that. If I had to go...
Oh, I'd definitely rather have lethal injection.
Yeah.
Out of those 40 people, one of them was a female, 39 were male.
No kidding.
Yes, and I don't have any information on her.
I wonder what that biatch did.
Something that required the death chamber, according to them. That last execution that was by lethal injection, that happened in 1989. After that execution, all of the prisoners that were on death row were transferred to Potosi Correctional Center, and it's in Mineral Point, Missouri. In 1938, the prison got its first hospital. How about that? 5 stories, 240 beds. It's a pretty good size hospital.
Dang, that is a big one.
When you got 5,200 prisoners.
Yeah.
You know.
How many beds?
240. This is a prison, so obviously there was a lot of bad stuff that went on.
Yeah.
And within the prison, like every prison, there were several murders, there were attempted suicides, and there were plenty of riots.
Mm.
None of the riots were like the one of September 1954. That is what this prison is known for. You have to know that from 1952 to 1954, there were several riots in prisons all across the country. So when authorities heard talk about a riot in any of these prisons, they took it seriously. So here we go. It's the evening of September 22nd, 1954. Two inmates pretend to be sick. So two guards come down to check on them. The inmates grab the guards. They overpower them. They beat one of the guards pretty bad, beating mercilessly.
Hmm.
They took the guards' keys, and they started releasing all of the other prisoners. Eventually, several hundred inmates were loose and running all over the complex. They broke windows, destroyed furniture, and even set several fires throughout the prison, including in some of the factories we spoke about earlier. This was beyond controllable. So in fact, the powers that be told the press that they were not even going to attempt to secure the cell blocks that night. Instead, they were going to turn their attention into preventing a massive breakout. You can imagine.
I cannot even imagine. No, I can't.
So early the next morning, 18 men went into the cell blocks. There was about 300 of the rioters that were in this four-story white stone building. Now, this was a building that was not part of the prison as far as where inmates were allowed in. But that's where they're at now. I guess, you know, they didn't really care about after they already started rioting, they didn't really care where they should be or shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So they're in this building. They got these 18 men ready to go in. They got 100 policemen standing outside of the prison that were, I guess, more of the second line of defense in case they absolutely had to have something else. Mm-hmm. And then they had some armed state troopers on the rooftop to help out if necessary. So let's get back to the 18 that were going in. They were fully loaded. They had riot guns and submachine guns. They get into the building. They are immediately met with shouting and cursing, and they're pelted with items that were thrown from the inmates.
Mm-hmm.
The building was flooded. They said it was about 4 inches of standing water within the building. So they've obviously busted pipes and everything else in there. Not to mention all of the windows had been broken out. The guards, they get on the loudspeaker, and they ordered the convicts to go to the nearest cell and be quiet or they would be shot. They wouldn't play around.
No, not at all.
One of the inmates decided to test the guards and was shot and killed.
Well, there you go.
Surprisingly enough, the other inmates suddenly decided to go to the nearest cell and be quiet. By mid-afternoon, everyone was back in their cells, but four inmates had been killed. Another 50 inmates were injured, and one had attempted suicide but failed.
My gosh, how horrible.
Several buildings suffered severe fire damage, and they lay smoldering at this time. It was estimated that over $5 million worth of damage had been done by the rioters, and it was also determined that the riot started in Housing Unit 3. So because of the regular violence in this prison, Time magazine named it the bloodiest 47 acres in America in 1967.
Yeah, I guess that's all right. It seemed like there'd be a lot more bloodier stuff than that.
Well, but there might not be bloody 47 acres. This was the bloodiest 47 acres.
Yeah, that is so crazy. I mean, I know this is stupid, but you're in prison, and that's bad enough, but you know you're going to have to stay in prison. Why are you not taking care of your shit? Why you got to tear up everything?
Well, I mean, I guess they figured this is a way to get back at somebody, because look at that. Somebody's got to spend $5 million to fix it.
That's very true.
So I guess they figured, I might be in here, and I'm staying in here no matter what, but now you're stuck with this bill.
Mm.
So, I mean, I guess it's just a mindset.
Right.
So the prison was closed in 2004 after 168 years of continuous operation.
That is crazy.
Which is one of the longest in United States history.
Yeah, that's awesome. Not awesome, but I'm just saying. That's pretty impressive.
After closing, many of the 50 buildings were torn down to make room for federal courthouse and some other state buildings. During the 168 years that they operated, there were some pretty big names to come through there, and we're going to talk about a few of them. In 1925, bank robber and well-known participant of the Kansas City Massacre, Charles Arthur Floyd, was sent here. You probably know him better as Pretty Boy Floyd.
Oh. Yeah.
Then you got Blanche Barrow. It could be Barrow. And she was part of the Bonnie and Clyde gang.
Mm-hmm.
She was there.
She was a tough chick.
That was 1933.
Yeah, she was cool.
What about boxer Sonny Liston?
I don't think I've ever heard of him.
Well, if you remember, the famous picture of Muhammad Ali bent over the other boxer, that boxer on the ground is Sonny Liston.
Oh, see, I didn't know yeah. that. I know that picture well.
Yes, Sonny Liston was the heavyweight champion of the world at some point, but he started his boxing career there at the prison. Here's a name you'll know, James Earl Ray, who is famous for the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. Yeah. He was in here and escaped in 1967, a year before assassinating Dr. King.
You gotta be kidding.
No. Are you ready for some paranormal stuff?
I am. So,
I need Hank Williams Jr. to sing that for me.
Okay, so I know it's not operational anymore, but is the prison itself still standing?
Yeah, you can go take tours and ghost tours and stuff like that.
I'd like to do that. That'd be cool.
Tom Wells, he worked as a guard at the prison in 1989, and now he's leading some of the prison ghost tours that go on. He said that he's not a ghost hunter, but he kind of lucked into one of the coolest part-time jobs ever. He had his own paranormal experience when he was a guard. Mm. This story's pretty cool. So it was a beautiful day. It was around 3 p.m. Like I said, this is back in 1989. Wells was talking to an inmate named John. That's when another inmate, long blonde hair, t-shirt, pair of jeans, walks right out the door, right past the two of them.
Oh, it's the prison door?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was still into the yard area. Part of the prison. But he walks through here. Well, this pissed, you know, Wells off because this happened during a prison head count. And when you're doing a prison head count,
mm-hmm. you can't be just.
Yeah, you can't be wandering around, and everybody knows the rules there. So he thought that SOB just walked out during a head count. And he was going to jump down his throat. So he goes out, he walks around the building, he walks up the right side of the building and didn't see anybody. So he figures the man ran around the other side of the building. He then went around the other side of the building, still nothing. That's when he got to the big gate. The big gate was locked, so he knows nobody got through there. So Wells was sure he saw this guy.
What about the other guy he was talking to?
Yeah, right. So he's like, well, but now he's all the way on the other side of the building, so he can't really talk to that guy. So he goes up to a tower that's up on the left side of the building. So he asks the guard in the tower, he's like, hey, did you see anybody? Of course, the guard said, no, it's count time. It's locked down. Well, that's when Wells spots a van that's sitting there, and the prison uses this van to take supplies up and down the hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
His first thought is, oh, man, this guy's in a van, and he's going to try to escape.
Yeah.
The van was on a hill, so he could kind of see underneath of it as he walked up.
Mm-hmm.
He looked in the back window. All the seats had been taken out because they didn't need them. They needed it for cargo, so they took all the seats out of the van. Looked in the back window. Nobody was in there. He opens the van up. He checks everywhere inside. Nothing. So remember John. He was the guy that was standing there with him.
Right. That's who I was talking about.
Right. John, the inmate, walks up to Weller just as he's shutting the door on the van, and he says, you ain't gonna find that guy.
Oh my God, John said that?
Yeah. And Will said, what are you talking about? And John said, I saw him. And so Will says, well, what did he look like? He said, t-shirt, long blonde hair. And Will said, yeah, that's him. And John said, Wells, we ain't got nobody in the building that looks like that.
Mm.
Will said it was like, whoa, you're right. And he said that it was like, once he realized this, it was like he got punched in the stomach.
Ooh.
It's just so odd. But yeah, that's.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
I mean, think about this. You know, we've talked before about limestone.
Right.
And how it affects. People think that it absorbs negative energy and stuff like that. You got this whole prison.
Made out of it.
Made out of limestone. Every inch of it. Limestone. So, I don't know.
Wow. That's so cool. I wonder who that guy was, for real.
I don't know. But 168 years worth of prison torment.
Oh.
All absorbed into that limestone. Who knows? All right. We have prisoners and guards have reported ghostly sightings for years here. This is way before the prison even closed. Obviously, it's been closed mm-hmm. in 2004, so people see stuff now. There was an inmate by the name of John Firebug Johnson, and he was in there from 1883 to 1900. Old Firebug spent the majority of his time down in a dungeon.
Uh-oh, big troublemaker, huh?
Well, yeah. Prior to that, he tried to escape on several occasions. On one of these attempts, he set a fire that did $500,000 worth of damage and killed several inmates. That's how he got his name, Old Firebug.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And, you know, think about this. He got out of jail after, like, 18 years. How the hell is that? How do you do $500,000 worth of damage and you kill several inmates and you're out of jail in 18 years?
They just wanted to be done with him. Like, get him out of here.
I thought that was amazing. But anyway, he wrote a book after he got out, and it was called Buried Alive for 18 Years in the Missouri Penitentiary. In this book, he describes several apparitions that would terrorize the prisoners during the time that they were in there. So, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to have to live with somebody like that.
Yeah.
You know?
The A-Hall. I have to be careful because it really does.
Say A-Hole.
It does sound like the A-Hall. So the A-Hall is the oldest building, and it's said to be the most haunted spot on the property. Inside the A-Hall, there is four stories worth of cells with catwalks that crisscross against, you know, with each other. People on tour have said that they've been touched by invisible hands, and they felt a breath on their neck. There's also an overwhelming smell of body odor.
Ooh.
Here's the thing, though. That limestone that absorbs, most people don't think that's a paranormal thing. They just think that there's been so much body odor in there over the years, it's absorbed into those walls and you can't get rid of it. So that is a smell that a lot of people smell, but it may not be paranormal.
Oh my gosh, I bet it is. Ooh.
Many have seen apparitions of a man up on the catwalk. Equipment often malfunctions in here. This is not just ghost hunting equipment or cameras or stuff like just any kind of equipment in this building tends to, if it's plugged in or if it has battery, it has a tendency to malfunction. Apparently, there's also several shadow figures that are seen within the place. So it's a spooky place. Several guests have captured disembodied voices on their recording equipment, whether it be video or just audio. While there's several different reasons why this prison could be haunted, per se, one of the ones that doesn't get talked about very much is the parking lot. The
parking lot?
On the premises, there's a parking lot. But underneath that parking lot is several hundred bodies
buried. Holy crap.
And supposedly this is from where they had a big disease outbreak in the early years of the prison. And they just buried them all in a mass grave.
Oh my gosh. That would freak me out so bad.
And that area is right across from the gas chamber.
Oh, my gosh.
So you've got the gas chamber where 40 people died. And right close to it, you've got a parking lot full of hundreds.
It's how funny that so many people don't know that.
Yep. Wow. So while it's unclear who some of the apparitions are, several people believe that one is Walter Lee Donnell. So remember we talked about the prison riot of 1954, and we said that four inmates were killed during the riot. Walter Lee Donnell was the first. So let's find out a little bit who Walter Lee Donnell was. Well, he was a St. Louis thief, and he was looked at as a snitch by several of the inmates. And this came because he testified against some other criminals in St. Louis.
That's always not a good thing to do.
Right. The prison feared for his safety because everybody knew that he was a snitch. So they had him placed in isolation down in the hole for his own safety. So he was in the hole during the time, and matter of fact, in the very last cell at the end. So his cell was like a dead end of the prison wall.
Yeah.
So he's in that very last cell. Once the riot started, the inmates were released and several broke through a concrete wall.
What?
And they went, yeah, well, they had a sledgehammer.
They went to get him, after him?
Yes. They went through a concrete wall and went straight to the 30-year-old Donnell's cell. They cornered him and bashed his head in with a sledgehammer.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
They did more, and we'll get into that here in a little bit.
I don't want to know.
But you got to know. I did the research, and you're going to hear it.
Oh, my gosh.
I was watching Ghost Adventures just to... let me say this about Ghost Adventures. I think everybody knows how I feel about Zach Bagans. That's more about his style of paranormal investigating than it is about him as a person. But the one thing that I do like about the show, and I watch a lot of, if they've done an episode on a place I'm researching, I do like to watch it because they have really good interviews mm-hmm. with the people.
No, they do.
That were involved.
Yeah.
So I can find out some stuff, even if it's not from them, I find out from the people they're investigating and get some good stuff on there. So they actually did an episode on there, and I was watching that. And according to Ghost Adventures, and this irritated me, and I know it's TV, but here's the thing. So Zach tells a little bit about the story of what happens. And there's a guy that we'll talk about in a minute that was one of the ex-wardens there.
Mm-hmm.
He says that Donnell was killed with a hammer. Correct. But Zach says, okay, we're going to show you some inside the cell, and some of you may not want to see this. Okay, fair enough. So they start showing black and white what looks like evidence photos.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy laying there, his head's busted open, mm-hmm. there's blood, there's a bloody hand. And, you know, and it's got the little cardboard numbers, like 2, 3, right. 4, whatever, sitting there in front of them. One of the things it shows is a regular claw hammer. And I'm like, I've already researched this. It said a sledgehammer.
My God, I can't imagine.
But Zach is showing, he didn't say these were actual crime scene photos, but he said, some of you might not want to watch this.
Yeah.
And then it shows stuff that's making it appear that these are evidence photos, and it shows a regular claw hammer, just a basic hammer
mm-hmm.
with blood on it. Okay, so I said, okay, that's not what I read. Maybe Zach's right. Maybe this is what it really is. He's got it. So I go and I read. And here's what I found from the actual court records. According to the transcripts from the court, it says 6 men went into the cell at 10:30 p.m. and murdered him in a horrible manner. Fair enough. His body bore sundry stab wounds front, back, and elsewhere. 2 of these clear through to his heart. There were knife wounds on his neck. His skull was partially crushed in from a heavy blow, apparently made by a bloody sledgehammer found in his cell. So with that being said, I feel like that he was killed by a sledgehammer, and I don't know why.
He's probably like, this is a bunch of horse crap, man. I'm put down in the hole so you can't bother me. He would have probably never dreamed somebody would smash through concrete to get to him.
So with that being said, there was an interview with Mark Schreiber. He was the gentleman, he was the deputy warden there from 2001, 2004. So the last 3 years that the prison was actually open. He told the Donnell story, but he also said that he saw an inmate stabbed while he was there. He said this inmate had his arms handcuffed around his back. And even while guards or whoever the representatives from the university were taking him out, somebody jumped up there and stabbed the guy. Even right in front of
with the guards holding him.
Yeah, they were waiting for him. They were just waiting for the guy to get to that point and jumped up and did it. He also said there were 2 officers that he had to work the homicide case on in there.
Wow.
So, yeah, pretty bad place.
Yeah.
They also had a tour guide by the name of Maggie. Now, Maggie says she had an experience in the A-hole. She said, yeah, I really needed to make sure I pronounce that right, because we don't need Maggie talking about she had an experience in the A-hole. That would really, really sound bad. So she had an experience in the A-hole. She said that an entity came up behind her, grabbed her shoulder, and squeezed really hard to the point where it really panicked her. So you can imagine just, you're there and something like grabs your shoulder right by your neck and just squeezes it.
Freak out, yeah.
There's another tour guide by the name of Lupe. She captures some video footage of a window closing in cell 40 in the A-hole.
Man, oh man.
And actually, this is you can see this footage on Ghost Adventures if you go check it out. I had a hard time seeing what it actually was.
Yeah, I bet it would be hard to tell.
Well, I mean, they circled it and everything so you could see it, but I never could see it actually closed, but that's what it was. Lupe said that she was on a tour one time and the entire tour group heard screaming coming from the dungeon area. And then you've got Dana Matthews. Dana is You might not know her by Dana Matthews, but you might know her more by Dana Newkirk, Greg and Dana Newkirk, mm-hmm. who obviously did Hellier and stuff. But back in 2015, her and Nick Groff went down there. She was working for A Week in the Weird, and they went down there together. And who better to go with than Nick Groff? He's already been there. He was on the Ghost Adventures episode.
Totally.
And they were given a tour about Maggie Harris. On that tour, she shared a picture that a guest had taken in the A-hall from cell 48, which also just happens to be the cell where Donnell was killed.
Aww.
Cell 48. The guest didn't notice anything at the time that, you know, they took the picture. But when they got back, there was a strange-looking, distorted human figure standing next to her friend that only showed up in the picture and not in person.
Yikes. No, so, thanks.
So anyways, that's the story on the Missouri State Penitentiary.
That is creepy.
Yeah, fun.
Daggone. I would love to go see that building just because it's so old.
Oh, yeah. And it's a cool-looking place.
I bet.
It's a really cool-looking place.
Mm.
I wish I'd like to have been able to see them when all the buildings were there.
Yeah. Instead of just, did, you know, they knock them all down then?
No, they still got, you know, they still got a bunch, but there was 50 at one point.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot.
So.
Wow. Might have to take a trip.
Yeah. What we're going to do, though, is we're going to talk a little bit about some stuff, and then we've got this week's Fear of the Week.
Oh,
episode Leslie. 23.
Awesome.
So, and Leslie, by the way, has a new podcast. If you haven't heard it yet, we put up a little sample of it so you can go check it out. But it's called Because I Want to Know. And it's an interview podcast. It's completely different than what she does on Fear of the Week. So even if you're listening and don't like Fear of the Week, it's a completely different style for her. Mm-hmm. She is a fantastic interviewer.
She is.
And we'll be on an upcoming episode.
Yep.
So, yeah. But yeah, I know she's only got a couple of episodes out, but go subscribe. Give her a listen. I think you're going to like it.
Yeah, she does a great job.
All right, so real quick break from our sponsor, and then we'll get on with everything. Okay, let's talk about Pigeon Forge.
Let us.
It was so much fun.
Yes, it was.
It was, obviously, a lot of things happened with that. With the guys from Graveyard Tales were originally meant to be there, and then they weren't able to come.
Yeah, we missed them.
Justin Rimmel from Mysterious Circumstances filled in. Thank you, Justin, for that.
Yeah, he did a great job.
And then Joe Pooley, the paranormal investigator from the area, he had an incident that morning to where he couldn't show up.
True story.
So Kristen, our daughter from Hillbilly Youngins, filled in, and Kristen and Dakota got up there and spent some time answering some questions and talking about stuff. So it was really it turned out, with all the little obstacles that were thrown our way, it turned out really well.
They did a great job.
Yeah, we social distanced. So there was about, how many people you think were there? 30, 35?
30, yeah, 30, 35.
There's about 30, 35. And everybody was spaced apart. Everybody had masks on if they wanted to use it. I mean, some people took their mask off, but they were away from everybody else. Yeah. And, you know, obviously we kept our mask on as much as we could, but I mean, it's hard to sit up in front of a microphone and talk to people with a mask on.
Yeah, we didn't do that. Yeah. So
so we took the mask off from doing that. And some people, they want pictures and, you know, so we just, everybody, you know, for the most part, I thought did a really good job. We had plenty of hand sanitizer there for everybody, and it went really well. So if you came to the show, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. It was just an honor meeting all of you and seeing some of our old friends come out, and it was just a lot of fun. Yeah, so glad we got to do it.
We got to give away a lot of El Yucateco hot sauce.
Yep, we sure did. And then Joe supplied us with hand sanitizer, which was cool, and mask. Yep, and it was just a lot of fun, and we were very grateful that we were able to come together. I wish we could do more of them, but I guess not. So
we'll work it out next year.
Yeah,
and we almost got attacked by a bear.
We did. Was it cool?
Yeah, it's funny. We've been going to the Gatlinburg area, Pigeon Forge area for 13, 14 years now. And sometimes 2 to 3 times a year. And up until this year, we had never seen a bear. Never. We always hear people, oh, we've seen a bear. We were in our hotel room, and it came right up to the hotel room. We could sit. Never. And we stay places purposely to be able to see bears. And it just hadn't happened. So earlier this year, back in June, we went and we went to a place called Cade's Cove, which everybody says, if you want to see a bear, there you go. And we seen some, but they were from a distance, but we were just excited.
Yeah.
So now we get to this place, we're driving up to the little cabin area. And as soon as I turn onto the road, a bear jumps right in front of the car and jumps up. And it's like a probably medium sized bear.
Mm-hmm.
And it jumps up into the woods. And I'm like, Tracy, did you see that? And she was looking at her phone, so she didn't see it. But it was funny because, I mean, he was gone. Look at his
quick. Yeah,
But then a little later, she saw him out up in the woods. And
yeah,
then,
right. And it's so funny because the cabin kind of embedded into the mountain.
Yes.
Into the, I mean, it was like right there. So I saw him walking around. And, of course, Kristen's freaking out this whole time. You know, like she's like having a panic attack. And then continue on.
Well, then a little bit later, I decide to, you know, I'm out on the deck with the youngest granddaughter, Addison. And she's 8. And I said, you want to walk down with me and we'll just walk around down at the driveway area? And she's like, yeah. So we go down there and we're looking. And I'm looking one direction. She looks over towards where we had the car parked, which was about, I'd say probably 30 yards away. Look, a bear. That's the way she would look, a bear, like it was nothing. And I look over and there's this bear like slowly walking towards us. And we were really close to the stairway to lead up. We were up on the third floor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, go on, Addison. Let's go ahead and go. And she takes like 3 steps and turns around and looks. I'm like, I'm trying to take pictures too. I'm not going to lie. But I mean, obviously her safety came first. So I'm like, go on, Addison, let's go. And we get him up to about the second level. And here's the bear come walking, climbs up the wall, all slow and Mosley, you know, climbs up the wall. And now he's literally 10 feet from us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm rushing the kids up the stairs. By now, Dakota had done came down and getting a good look. And I'm trying to rush them up. Cause I mean, this bear is close enough where he could have climbed right up where we were.
Yeah, and, that's cool.
You know, and I've heard they can get up some pretty good speed if they really want to. Yeah. So, you know, just because he was going slow now don't mean he was going to keep that.
Yeah, it was hot that day. He probably wasn't wanting to go fast.
I don't know. I just know I probably looked delicious. So.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get 2 snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Oh. I didn't want to take that chance.
That's funny. It was a fun trip.
I like bear hugs, but not a true bear hug.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a really fun trip.
Sorry, I'm making noise.
That's okay. We want to do the iTunes reviews real quick?
Let's do that real quick.
Okay. And then we'll get Leslie up here in a second.
Alrighty. All right. We had Tinley Aaron, our lovely Mojo Lobster, Wrench Bender 1, J Moto Freak 72, Golly Bill, Page 87, Trish Canella, MK Roll, and Courtney Henyon. Thank you guys. Those reviews were really awesome, and we just appreciate those more than anything. It really helps us, and I just love like what y'all have to say. I'm very fortunate.
I agree. All right, before we bring Leslie on, the other topic that I want to talk about, and if you're in the group, you already know this, but if you're at the Pitch and Ford show, you know it, but I have decided to write a book, and I've talked about it in the past, but we've actually started on it now. And what the book will involve, it's meant to be inspirational, but it's a little bit of something for everybody, especially if you're into the paranormal. This book is going to be into 3 segments. It's going to be into my paranormal experiences growing up in a haunted house. And then it's going to cover a very hard thing to cover, which is my past with depression, with a suicide attempt. And you're going to see a different version of me than what you've come to know, because I am a different person than I was 15, 20, 25 years ago. And, you know, I've said this to myself, not really to anybody, but we talked about doing a book a year ago. And the only reason that I really haven't done it, if I'm going to be honest about it, is the fact that I didn't necessarily want to relive the type of person that I was. It's not the type of person that you probably would even think that I was. I mean, I wasn't a criminal by any means. You know, I wouldn't like a, you know, one of the birds from Ozark. Mm-hmm. That wasn't me. But, you know, I wasn't a great husband. I wasn't a great father. And I don't think I was near the person in general that I am today. And, you know, it's tough to talk about those things, but it's the cruel reality. And I'm living proof that people can change. I'm not perfect today. It's a work in progress. It's been a work in progress for 20 years. And it's going to be a work in progress the next 20 years. It's just the way that it is. And, you know, and that's the second part of this book. And that's the part that I'm dreading. And then the third part is where you come in. This is where we talk about how we take paranormal, that's always been a love and a therapeutic thing for me, and we take people that are battling depression, and we try to use the paranormal to help those people. And at the same time, I'm helping myself. The goal is for people to read this and say, you know what? I can get through this. I can be a better person. I can fight my demons. I can get rid of some of my suicidal thoughts. And I'm wanting to put myself out there in a way to show people that if I could do it, you could do it too. So even though it's hurtful to admit some of these things on my own level, I think it's necessary to help others. So that's the goal here, is to see how my depression, my guilt, and some of my life and in my paranormal experiences have come together to create Hillbilly Horror Stories, which, to be honest with you, I would do it all over again if that's what it means, because we have had person after person write us to tell us that this show has either got them to seek help, or it's kept them from committing suicide for one reason or another, or it's, you know, just gotten them through a rough time. They had a loss of a loved one. They had a breakup. They had a divorce. And we helped them get through something. And 4 years of seeing emails and letters and instant messages from all different social media platforms is just amazing. So I decided that if we were going to do a book, it was going to be in honor of those people. Those people who it's made a difference. Those people in the group. That felt like that the group has made a difference. I just heard from somebody the other day. I'm not going to get into names, because even though they've given me the authority to, I'm not going to get into names right now. But, you know, as we'll talk about the group in a second, but we're going to talk about the positive right now. I've got a listener from Australia that has went through hell this year, and he went through a divorce after 20 some odd years. And he didn't feel like he could take it anymore. His own words: "I just don't think I could take it anymore." He joined the group because he wanted help. He contacted me, and I told him to join the group. And he met someone in the group here in the United States that has meant the world to him. He told me the other day that they've talked on the phone for up to 9 hours at a time. And she feels the exact same way about him. She's also somebody who's had her own battles with depression. And now they found each other. And no, it's not like a romantic relationship or anything like that, but it's a helping each other relationship. And she told me that he had mentioned to her that one night when they were talking, he had bought himself a bottle of liquor. He had already started drinking, and his intention was to just go out, get in his car, and kill himself. And she talked him out of it. And they both say if it wasn't for the group, they don't know if he would be here today.
Wow.
So that's what this book is going to be about. I want to include stories, if people are willing to share them. And we can also, like I said, make sure it's anonymous so you don't have to put it out there. But if somehow this group has made a tremendous difference in your life, whether it forced you to go get help, or whether it kept you from committing suicide. And trust me, we probably have received at least 20 messages that said it's kept them from physically committing suicide.
But we want you all to understand is how much you guys have helped me and Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, it's therapeutic.
It's incredible, because just what you all don't realize what you guys have done for us and the way sometimes we look at things. And so that's why we love this group so much.
But I want to include some of your stories in the books, if you're okay. So mm-hmm. if you have a story, you know, that you can condense down to just a couple of paragraphs and want them in the book, please send them to me. Send them to me any way you want to, and I'll make sure they get in the book, because I think that's important for other people to see that what we've done has made a difference. And that's why we still do it, in all honesty.
Well, I just want to say to you that in the beginning, I doubted that you were going to do a book. I don't know why. I just did. And I just want to say that I'm proud of you, because I've read the beginning of your stuff, and it's incredible. And you literally are, you just get so involved with it. I don't know what to say, except I guess I want to apologize to you, because like I said, I was like, okay, we're going to write a book, you know, that's just how it was. But, you know, I am just really proud of you, because you're doing a great job, and so far so good. What you have written so far has really touched my heart. So hopefully it'll be out there for everybody else too.
Yeah, it's probably going to, my goal is to have it out by the end of the year. But here's the thing, and this is why I'm mentioning this now. I could probably have most of it written in the next 3 weeks. But then there's a lot that goes on. I mean, it has to be polished up. It's got to be proofread. It's got to be edited. So I'm asking you now, if you've got these stories, to get them to me. And because I'm going to be sending them off to editors and stuff like mm-hmm. that, probably within the next month or so. So that's kind of the goal.
Yeah, would be so amazing if you guys did that.
All right, so that leads me to this. And I hate to be a negative Nancy, but I don't really have a choice in this matter. I'm just trying to plead with you guys. If you're in the group, try to remember that it is hard with this many people. And I don't want to go backwards and have less people, because you don't know that one person that's no longer in the group that you could have helped that you can't. You know, here's the situation. We've had a couple of members in the past month that's openly came out and said, hey, you know, the group's not as supportive as I thought it was. And let's remember that everybody's got a different version of what support is, and everybody's got a different level of support. Now, when we see stuff like somebody makes a rude comment, we've got five different people that control this group. We've got myself and Tracy. We've got Tim Mullins. We've got Natasha, who started the group, and we got John Joslin. You can contact any one of us if you have an issue, and we will look into it. There are so many posts on that thing every day, we sometimes just miss it. So unless mm-hmm. somebody tells us, we won't know. But the reality of it is, we're not going to be able to please everybody. And, you know, I advertise. I had a person point this out to me, and I'll take this one. They said, you advertise this as a safe place. What is a safe place? And the fact that you can post whatever, but most people don't scrutinize you. Here's the problem, though. Sometimes somebody will make a comment that most people won't consider to be scrutinizing, but you might take it as scrutinizing, and now all of a sudden you're offended that somebody said this to you. I get it. I can't control all of that. I can't control the way each individual person feels. And I'll tell you what brought this up. I won't bring up the person's name, but I've had a conversation with them off the record, and it didn't go the way I wanted it to. But somebody posted a meme. And a meme, we've all seen these 1,000 times. We all growing up. How many times have you heard, you know, from your parents, all that music you listen to is garbage. Back in my day, we had this music. Or how many times have you heard, oh, in my day, we had to walk up both sides of hills, you know, in the snow to get to school. That's always going to be a thing. And we had a meme that somebody said, back in the 80s, we did this, 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 and that. And then today, somebody's, you know, the kid's upset because the batteries died in their iPad. I would not have thought for the world of me that somebody would have took that as offensive. But somebody younger did find it offensive. And then they started criticizing everybody on that post about the comments they were making. Look, I get it. I wouldn't have thought it was offended, but it was offended to somebody else. And who am I to say to somebody else, you shouldn't be offended by this, no matter what it is. Everybody knows what offends them. But my point is, in a group that big, somebody's going to post something that's going to offend somebody. Have a little bit of ability, if you see something like that, just scroll past it. If you start criticizing everybody, then it starts a fight. Now everybody's criticizing each other, and that's what we're not trying to do. We'll take down as much stuff as we can if we really feel like it's offensive. You know, and, you know, we try to put the rules in place, but have a little bit of patience with us is all I'm asking. You know, don't come out and blast us that it's not the place that you thought it once was. It's not supportive, because you know what? For every one of those that you can tell me it's not supportive, I can give you 70 of people that will tell you it's 10 times more supportive than they ever thought it would be. And that's all I'm saying. Have patience with the group. Report stuff if you do, and we'll look at it. But just because we don't rule in your favor doesn't mean we don't care about you and we're not being supportive. We have to look out for the whole of the group. And with 50 or 5,000 people, it's pretty damn hard to do sometimes. So sorry that that went on so long, but I felt like it needed to be said. Please send me your stories if you want to include in the book on how the group's helped you. And we'll put that on there. So let's listen to Leslie. Sorry it took so long to get into her, but this is a good one. All right, hold on 1 second, and we'll listen to Leslie now.
You are listening to the Fear of the Week.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 24 of The Fear of the Week with author Leslie Fear. You can pick up all of her books at Amazon, including the newest book, which is available for pre-order. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you, guys. Good to be here.
Hello.
Good to hear your voices. Hi.
So, Leslie, real quick on the book that's available for pre-order. I think we talked about it, but I don't know if we gave a name or not on the last episode.
Well, the name of it is called Peripheral, like peripheral vision.
Okay, I think you did do that. Okay, good.
Yeah, and if we didn't, I don't know if we did or not.
I don't think we did.
Yeah, but it's a paranormal romance, just like all my other books that I write. That's just the genre I enjoy. Like you said, you can pre-order the paperback, and the ebook pre-order should be up very soon, and it'll be out August 4th.
Awesome. All right, Leslie, this week, it seems like the stories that people comment the most are the ones that involve some type of bacteria or mites or some kind of organisms that kind of eat away at our body. And you seem to have found another source. And I'm going to let you take it away.
Well, we're going to talk about brain-eating amoebas.
Are you playing a tambourine in the background back there?
I am not. But I would like to if I could, because I'd be like celebrating this stuff. Tracy doesn't like it one bit, but I think it's fun. I liked your joke last week on the whole football team.
Uh-huh.
I got you right back, bucko.
You did. And that was awesome.
So brain-eating amoebas. I don't know how much you know about them, guys.
Not
but
a dang thing.
I have one disappointing thing to tell you. They don't actually eat your brain.
Oh, lies. All lies.
It's very deceptive.
It is totally a lie. What happens is they make your brain swell. And that's never good, which causes brain damage, which causes you to die. But for some reason, somebody came up with that phrase. I tried to look it up, couldn't find out why they said that. I think it's just somebody coined the phrase and it just kind of stuck, because it's way more sexy than your brain swells because an amoeba went up your nose.
Yeah,
you know?
Brain swelling amoeba.
Brain swelling amoeba, yeah. So, and that's the thing. You can only get them when a contaminated amoeba goes up your nose. Now, where would this happen? Do you know where this would happen, guys?
In the water.
Yes, but it typically occurs when people go swimming during the warm summer months, you know, when it's really hot, in freshwater lakes and or rivers.
See, so we just went to a big lake. Everybody got in to go swimming except for us. And now if they end up with brain swelling because of an infected amoeba, the joke's on them.
It is on them. Well, and it's usually that stagnant, really hot water. You know, now rivers aren't necessarily stagnant, but they can get really hot too, right?
Right.
So, and that's the thing. They love hot water. They can survive in up to 113 degree temperatures, which is 45 degrees in Celsius. I did the math.
Oh, there you go.
I know. see, I'm coming through for you. I am. I'm doing my job.
It's beautiful.
No, I'm not getting paid.
It's beautiful to see you grow.
Thank you. I'm learning from the best, see? So once you actually have an amoeba inside your brain, you don't even know. It can take 2 to 15 days for the symptoms to appear. And which I didn't think that. I thought that was really strange. I mean, I guess it just takes that long for it to, because it's such a small organism.
I mean, when you think about it, it's really no different than what we're going on right now with COVID-19, because they're saying it's like a 2-week incubation period. So it's kind of the same.
What's the symptoms?
Well, the symptoms are mostly it's very bad headaches, very high fever. And I'm going to give you an example of a little girl that it actually happened here in Texas. And I remember hearing this on the news. It's back in 2017. What happened to her was she went swimming on September 17th, 2000.
New year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
In 2019, a 10-year-old Texas girl died due to the brain eating, well, just the amoeba. They gave you the actual proper name of it, but it's just easier to say from the amoeba. 8 days after getting a headache and high fever. Now, the doctors, they're not going to go, oh, well, she's got a brain-eating amoeba. But they didn't think that. Of course, they just thought she had a virus, and they sent her home. You know, of course. And her parents even understood that. So, but what happened was she went home, and then she started feeling very, very ill, to where I think it was on, like, that following Sunday, you know, she became unresponsive, fever went really high, and she died like the very, very next morning. And it was bad. And she had, and I think it was my husband wants to say it was like a Fossil Creek Lake or something like that. I don't know where, Fossil Rim Lake. I don't know. Anyway, we got a lot of dinosaur places around here, believe it or not, that they find dinosaur bones and stuff, and they call it fossil whatever. And it seemed like it was something called fossil something. I should have looked that up. But anyway, not that that matters. But it's very hot here. I know it gets hot in Kentucky, but it's very dry hot too, and it gets that much hotter. When it's more humid, it doesn't get as hot outside. But when it's you know, like a dry heat, gets really hot. You can actually stand it longer in the shade when it's hot, but it still gets that much hotter. And they love that hot water. Mm-hmm. That's what's scary.
Yeah, that poor little thing.
Yeah, and back to the COVID, you said, you know, remember you said it takes like 2 weeks for that to show up? There's a lady, I don't know if y'all saw the news, there's a lady who now is having it now. She's had it again. And I don't know if it's just Dallas or it's the national news. I didn't know which one it was because I just caught the end of it. But she's actually got it. She got it in February, and now she has it again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is like a chicken pox deal that eventually comes back out as shingles or something. Where she had it in her body already, or if she came in contact with somebody else.
Well, it's scary because they, like I said, they know very little about this disease, obviously. And, you know, and she even gave antibodies. But I have a feeling it just went dormant. It didn't actually leave her system. And God knows what made it come back. Or maybe she was just exposed again. I don't know.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy? But no, brain eating amoebas, they don't actually eat your brain. The symptoms are deceptively exactly like a really severe cold or upper respiratory infection. Doctors would never think. Now, if they'd caught it, they would have given her an antibiotic, a really, really, really strong antibiotic. And I had it written down. I can't find it. What was it? Where is it? Oh, it's called nitromidazo. And it kills the amoebas in the wall of your intestines and in your liver and in the stem of your... Oh, I'm sorry. And in your blood. And they work by stopping the growth of the bacteria. And if she'd had that antibiotic, you know, if they'd have known, but that's not the first thing you think of when you have a headache. Oh, I have a brain tumor, or I have a brain-eating amoeba, you know. They just thought she had a virus. And of course they weren't, you know, in trouble or anything, or they didn't get, you know, sued or anything. But yeah, some people might want to do that. They had no way of knowing. And I don't even think they knew until the symptoms of her just going unconscious. And they're like, wait a minute, let's do some more testing. And they found it in her blood. It was really sad.
By that time, it was too late.
Yeah. So people in Texas or people in the really, really hot areas, just be careful when you're jumping in lakes and little rivers. I don't. And even contaminated pool water or whatever. Just be careful. Use nose plugs or just don't go underwater if you can help it. Or don't suck up any water. It's hard to do. I mean, I don't know how many people could do that. But or go to the ocean because they can't survive in salt water.
Yeah, I'm not really into lakes and stuff like that as far as swimming. I mean, if it's like a quarry or something that's like really clear water or something, I might feel different about it. But the actual lakes and stuff, like when we were out at this lake, I mean, it's a beautiful lake, but it was green. And to me, that's not something I want to swim in.
No, I know. And when I was young, and I'm sure we all can say this, Tracy too, we used to go to a lake like Tewakene, and we would go, that's like the biggest man-made lake here in Texas. I used to live in Wills Point. We had a dock and we that's what you did. You just jumped in the lake and it wasn't a big deal. Now I'm grossed out by it.
Oh, I am too.
I can't imagine doing it now, but when you're young and a kid, you don't think about it like that. You're like, hey, cool, jump in. Let's just, and you get an inner tube. Let's float down with some beer.
Yeah, right. No, I'm you. It grosses me out.
I'm more into creeks. I mean, if you get a really nice creek with a nice little flow growing and a bunch of rocks and stuff everywhere, just get in, splash around. That's more me.
That's more you. Yeah, the whitewater rapids. You don't like that though?
Love that too, but you can't really get in there without a raft because typically you get crushed to death by the rocks and killed, and that's not really how true. I like to spend a Saturday or a Sunday.
No, me neither. Especially or a weekday for that matter.
So, well, once again, Leslie, you've outdone yourself. Awesome job.
Thank you. And I'm so glad that you all know now to be careful about hot water and stagnant water and lakes or rivers in very hot parts of the United States, because you have to be careful, guys. And I guess I'll see myself out.
That wraps up this week, Tracy.
It was a good one.
I enjoyed it. Like I said, I like the prison ones.
Yeah, I do too. They're all really sad.
They are. But some of these older prisons, man, they are some of the most beautiful structures.
I know, and they're crazy.
So, I mean, like, I know with the Ohio State Penitentiary, I was watching a video on that recently. And the people were talking about how many people come there strictly for the architecture. So it's kind of amazing. No wonder they picked it for Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys. Thank you so much. We love you. We appreciate you. And we'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah, we love you guys. We hope you have a blessed week.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps, plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Save big money on your kitchen projects at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com today.